board. My name apparently is Twinkle Toes Taxer. Water Resource Control Engineer in your Lake Tahoe office. I'm here tonight to present the culmination of almost a year's worth of effort to address our CEP program and the manner in which we develop and implement CEPs, and to do so in a way that is more transparent to the public. Is this too scattered?
It's good, huh?
Good enough? Yeah. Okay. So we... as part of this effort, the board established a subcommittee consisting of Dr. Horn and Peter Humphrey. And I was able to work with that group, and we presented an informational item for the board's feedback last October. And tonight we have incorporated the feedback that we received to prepare a SEP program document for your review and hopefully approval. There are a number of late revisions, which I will get into later, but most of the significant is that we are modifying the term SEP policy to SEP program. So if I accidentally say SEP policy, just think in your head it's actually a SEP program. So the first part of the SEP program document is to provide guidance to water board staff when we are entering settlement negotiations with dischargers in the event that there is a violation to be addressed. There's the preference of the board to provide some factors for staff to consider in these settlement negotiations that go above and beyond the state board's SEP policy. One of the first issues that the board would like us to consider to develop programs that are develop projects that address regional board priorities. These could be priorities that are listed in the triennial review process or some other prioritization process. The board also likes projects that provide water quality benefits and that are quote on the ground types of projects, such as wetlands restoration projects, watershed restoration projects, things of that nature. We also like technical studies in the sense that the kind of technical studies that would help promote a watershed management plan, or a technical study that would fulfill a gap that is identified in the watershed management plan. For example, the development of a salt nutrient management plan as identified in an island group, for example. And the state board SEP policy also outlines two kinds of nexus that must be met for projects to be considered eligible for a SEP. These are programmatic nexus and geographic nexus. With respect to geographic nexus, the feedback that we heard back from the board in October was that the board liked projects that are located in the same hydrologic unit as where a violation occurred. The board also seemed to like projects that are located within the same ratepayer boundary if a violation was incurred upon by a utility district. So that is how the SEP program document is currently drafted. But we also heard many other opinions from the board at the time. And we recognize that there's going to be a bit of a discussion regarding this matter. But just to give you an example of how the program is currently drafted, it does have some inconsistencies with how the board may want to proceed in the future. For example, if, for example, there was a violation in the Susan River area, and we enter into a settlement negotiation with the discharger in that area, it may come to light that there may not be a project that would provide a good water quality benefit in the Susan River hydrologic unit. But there may be some projects up north, say in the Madeline Plains or Abilene Lakes area. Well, the way the current document is drafted, it would preclude us from considering those projects to be used to satisfy geographic nexus because they're in separate hydrologic units. Similarly, in the southern reach of our region, if, for example, there is a discharge or a violation that have occurred in the Ivanpah hydroelectric unit, which is where Polycor is located, there may not necessarily be projects that would provide great beneficial use to our region in that area. But there are several hydrologic units surrounding that hydrologic unit. There are several small hydrologically disconnected hydrologic units in that area. And there may be a project in a nearby unit that could provide a greater beneficial use benefit for us. For example, a project in the Mojave watershed area. Again, such a project would not be considered eligible to satisfy a geographic nexus the way the document is currently drafted. But the regional board does have flexibility in how we can address this. First off, we can look at geographic nexus and redefine it from the way the current document is drafted. Technically speaking, geographic nexus could be satisfied if the project was located within the entire Lahontan region. And the board could elect to broaden its discretion to define geographic nexus to encompass the entire region. That's one extreme example. We could also look at geographic nexus being satisfied if a project were located in the same boundary as a watershed management group. That's another example. We could also look at projects that satisfy a programmatic nexus in order to consider a project that's located in a different area from where a violation occurred. The board actually did this many years ago for a violation that occurred in Sierra's Lake. That's located in the Chota hydrologic unit. That violation involved the discharge of an oil into a surface water that adversely impacted migratory bird habitat. So in addition to correcting that violation, the board realized that there weren't any further opportunities for additional water quality benefits. So they considered the enhancement of migratory bird habitat beneficial use areas in the surrounding hydrologic units as a step. So that's one example. So those are different examples of how the board can exercise its discretion. So we do recognize that some additional discussion needs to be had in this matter, and we look forward to receiving your guidance. But in addition to how we define the different nexus, the board also has discretion with during the 30-day review period when staff develops a step through a settlement negotiation. The board always has the opportunity, as does the public, to provide comments during the 30-day review period. But the board has that extra bonus point of requesting a full hearing for the board to discuss that specific settlement agreement and to provide additional direction to staff and to the discharger. And the board can amend this program document at any time to address the changing regulatory environment or to address changing board attitude regarding this matter. The next element of the SEP program document is the establishment of SEP accounts. These will be accounts that are established through various organizations throughout our region to handle the funds and to handle suspended liability amount funds, and to use those funds to implement supplemental environmental projects. So, a quick overview of how this will work, and then I'll get into it in more detail, is that the first step will be to identify potential partner organizations throughout our region. These will be organizations such as IREN groups, watershed groups, government entities, basically watershed-based groups that are stakeholder-based. And we'll conduct some outreach to help identify those groups in areas that where those groups aren't readily obvious. Once we identify those groups, we will then develop agreements with those organizations. Attached to the program document is a template agreement that we would use, and that agreement would be modified to address region-specific issues. once we have that agreement, as part of that agreement, we will incorporate region-specific criteria that we will want the partner organizations to use in how they identify potential projects that may be eligible for consideration at this step. And then once we get a list of potential projects, we will then encourage dischargers to participate in this program. Again, it's always up to the discharger to elect whether or not they want to do this or not, because they are taking a risk in participating in the program. They are suspending a portion of their liability, and if a step isn't completed as envisioned and as agreed upon, then the discharger is still on the hook to pay the suspended liability amount to the appropriate state board accounts. So digging into this a little deeper, we're looking at some specific criteria in who we want to partner with. We're seeking watershed-based groups that implement stakeholder processes to identify and prioritize eligible projects. We're looking at partner organizations that are either government entities or nonprofit entities. We're not looking to partner with private corporations or private individuals, because those types of organizations don't typically incorporate a public stakeholder-based process. And that's the whole key of what we're doing, is to incorporate that stakeholder process to be more transparent in how these projects are being identified and selected. We're looking at organizations that are experienced in project management, experienced in conducting watershed restoration projects, experienced with conducting multi-agency and stakeholder collaborative processes, organizations that are experienced in incorporating regional approaches to water management and using those water management concepts in their land use planning decisions. We're also looking at organizations that are experienced in conducting monitoring of their projects to ensure that their projects are successful and to implement adaptive management processes in their monitoring concept or in their monitoring process. And finally, we're looking for organizations that are accountable in many ways. Organizations that are accountable for successfully completing restoration projects or other types of watershed types of projects, and organizations that are fiscally accountable. We're looking for organizations that are fiscally responsible for how they use funds to successfully implement projects. We're looking at organizations that have implemented sound accounting practices, and organizations that have implemented self-auditing procedures to ensure that funds are being used appropriately. So once they get through that hurdle, and we develop an agreement with them, then it will be the responsibility of the partner organization to use their stakeholder process and use their own set of criteria in conjunction with the criteria that we have established to identify, vet, and select potential projects that may be eligible for set consideration. Once they develop those projects, they will provide a list to us on a regular basis so that we can have that list posted on our website and have available to dischargers during settlement negotiations. And then if a discharger does elect to suspend a portion of their liability, it will be the responsibility of the partner organization to contract directly with that discharger to have the funds transferred to the partner organization, so that we are keeping our hands out of that transfer process. We're not establishing an account, we're not doing anything about that. We're just overseeing the successful completion of the SEP with the partner organization. So then it will be the partner organization's responsibility to use that money to fund, implement, and manage the SEP. And then they will provide an annual report to us on the progress of the SEPs that are in place, and not only the progress, but how the funds are being distributed to fund various elements of that SEP. So again, these are SEP accounts, not escrow accounts, and they're SEP accounts that are being established to fund a definable, discrete element that has a time frame attached to it, because we need that or the agreements with the discharger to suspend a portion of the liability so that this thing doesn't drag on forever. So what are the criteria that we were looking for in SEPs? Well, there's a plethora of criteria that we have listed in the program document. I'm not going to go through that in any great detail, but at a minimum, any potential project has to comply with the State Board's SEP policy. And in addition to that, we have our own additional criteria of meeting our prioritization list, addressing health and safety issues, projects that address multiple criteria on a statewide basis, projects that address different government priorities, like the governor's list. We really like projects where a partner organization can use an account to leverage it to obtain additional funding from other sources. That way we can fund something that is much larger than what we could fund individually from the old SEP process. But these are just examples of the different criteria. And the overall concept of this is, again, to be transparent and to have a transparent process. So the first element of this is to develop a pilot program to see how well this program is actually going to work before we, you know, go whole hog into this process. So that's the subject of another board item tonight. But once that pilot program is completed, we march forward with this process. Once we develop the partnership organization agreements, we will post those agreements on our website along with a link to the partner organization so that members of the public can see what it is we're doing. They can see who the partner organizations are. They can click to their website to see what their process is for identifying and vetting the projects and to see how they can be involved in that process. We also post the partner organization project list on our website so that people know what projects are that are being considered. And we also post on our website on an annual basis the steps that are in the process of being completed and steps that have been completed. So we do have some late revisions. These are basically to address issues that were raised by the Office of Chief Counsel. And instead of going through them page by page, I think I can just summarize them in the sense that all the changes are basically to change the SEP policy wording to SEP program. And that was done to ensure that people don't get the impression that we are inadvertently adopting a regulation. This is just a guidance document for us to use internally. We're also changing the term SEP escrow account to SEP account. We're not actually establishing escrow accounts. Those are things where people can keep throwing money into them and a partner organization can keep withdrawing money on, you know, forever until we stop putting money into it. That's not what we're doing. We're establishing an account to fund a discrete project with identifiable goals and time frames. And because we don't have SEP escrow accounts, we removed the language that required State Board's approval of those escrow accounts. And we're also clarifying that when, should there be any money left over in this process, say like a project was under budget, then those additional, then it'd be, it could happen, that it could be clarified the specific State Board accounts where those extra funds with being sent towards. And we also changed the term pilot project to pilot program just because we did. The program that you'll see is, the pilot project that you'll see consists of three projects, and it just seemed to make more sense to call it a program. We did receive a comment from Ed Hennebeld from the Squaw Valley area. He was concerned about dischargers being able to select which steps should be funded in this settlement negotiation process. Unfortunately, that process is out of our control. That's something that's required by the State Board's SEP policy, that a discharger can elect to fund a SEP or not do a SEP and just pay the entire penalty amount in cash. And also the discharger doesn't even have to fund a step that's on our list. They can choose to fund some other type of project pending our approval, of course. But our response to that, this is, we are being consistent with the state policy on this, and that we also do have the opportunity to help guide a discharger towards different SEP lists or projects on the list, for example. But in addition to that, it is hoped that by going through this very transparent process, that any project that is listed has gone through a public vetting process. And so it really doesn't matter what project a discharger chooses that's on the list. They're all worthwhile projects. And that's the goal of making this a very transparent process. And with that, I'll entertain any questions and invite you to discuss all the issues regarding geographic nexus.
Mr. Sandel, do you have questions for staff?
I have, yes. Actually, I don't have. I have one question, which is you list the updates to the website as once a year. I wonder whether it might be appropriate, at least for some things, to do it more frequently. The progress of the area of the project.
Regarding the progress? we could. I think we require them to report progress to us on a quarterly basis.
Okay. Well, so depending on what's reported and whether it's worthwhile, it might be better to update more frequently if there's something to say.
Mm-hmm. That's an easy fix. Yeah.
The other thing is, I take your point about the nexus, and I actually have a couple of rule changes to page number 10, 7, and 8, if you want to do them. I can just read it out and see if the board agrees, and maybe it's as simple as that, or maybe somebody can come up with a better way. But I think that it would be better for us to not limit our discretion from the beginning, but I don't think it would take much to change it.
So if I could suggest that in the last paragraph on 10.7, and it's the sentence that says, when evaluating the geographic nexus, the Lot and Water Board will generally favor, and that's those are changes, projects within the entire watershed boundary, and no changes in that all the way through all the text, but then I would add another sentence after district service area boundaries, which would say, however, the board may, at its discretion and upon consideration, decide to widen the acceptable nexus for a particular SEP program. Just so, I know we can change it at will, but I thought it might be nice to say it in this original document. And maybe somebody else can do it better than I do.
We have, Eric has a number of variations on how to address the geographic nexus, so we'll put yours into the mix.
Very
with the various options.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments?
No, that's all I have.
Well, I'm going to go down the row. Ms. Cox?
Thank you. I think the program should have a maximum flexibility. Tremendous step in the right direction. I would want whatever wording you end up on to allow the maximum flexibility, whether it's geographic application and later defining what that benefit might be. There's a lot of interconnectedness in the Manhattan region. Anyway, give as much flexibility there. One question I had on the SEP payment. How much control would that fine entity have in that payment? For instance, some payments are done in draws. You finish this milestone, and the reason I'm kind of new through this is because the fined entity, for lack of a better word to describe that, is on the hook until this project is completed. So if they put that entire pot of money in the hands of the one who's going to implement the SEP, and something happens, change in management and organization structure, and it is no longer viable for that SEP to complete the project, but yet they've got the money tied up, then that original entity who is paying this fine is still on the hook for that remediation. So can it be paid in a draw so as to protect that entity that has the liability?
Sure.
No.
It has to be paid within 30 days. I'm sorry, I'm Chris Kerrigan from the State Water Board, Director of the Office of Enforcement. Short answer is no. The payment has to be made either to the partner entity for SEP, and it can be up to half of it, or to the cleanup and abatement account. And I think it's important to recognize that the whole notion of a SEP always involves some risk to the discharger, and it always has. What this program does that's different is it presents partnership organizations that offer a much lower risk than the typical SEP partners that one would engage with. Now, public entities aside, that's why there's a vetting process for the partners. There are still going to be some entities that are extremely risk averse that are going to foresee what you've seen. But with the one example that you're going to see later, there's a proven and lengthy track record of successfully completing projects. And so you really have to think of it as comparatively advantageous to the current system, but there is no guarantee for the discharger, and that's something we just wouldn't be able to do.
Chris, generally in SEP orders, is there language included that allows the executive officer to extend dates if there's, I don't know, reasonable reason?
Yes. I mean, the trend in the practice is to include sort of a safety valve provision in the order. ACL orders that memorialize a SEP agreement are generally considered final upon issuance by the regional board, but there can be a savings clause inserted that allows a certain amount of discretion to the executive officer to extend deadlines or approve minor modifications to the project.
And the onus would be on vetting the SEP partners and making sure you had reliable partners that have that proven track record.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Jardine?
Yes, I like the idea that Eric had suggested, allowing that certain amount of flexibility, and I couldn't have said it better by any means. But I think we need to build in some flexibility. Like you say, there's some watersheds that, you know, there's no project available, but an adjoining one might be worthy. So I'd like to build in that kind of language.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I mean this whole thing started because I was thinking in terms of trucking. And then I started thinking in terms of the larger Wahontan area, and I was like, well, what if Caltrans caused a problem on 395 and along the Walker River, and there are no projects in the Walker River Basin, but there are some great projects in the Carson River drainage, for example. Wouldn't we want a SEP project to happen in the Carson River drainage? Yes, we would like that to be considered. And then I was thinking, well, okay, what if we said if it was a North Wahontan, it had to stay North Wahontan, if it was South Wahontan, it had to stay South Wahontan. And I thought, yeah, but the Inyo Mono Irwin Conway Summit goes right through Mono County, so if they had projects on the other side of Conway Summit from whatever, they'd be out of it. So it was like, so the language that brilliant Eric Taxer came up with is the short one, the one on this page, which is what I think we would propose, is that when evaluating geographic nexus, the Lahontan Water Board will consider projects within the entire Lahontan region, not just within the watershed where the violation occurred. The Lahontan Water Board prefers SEP projects be located close to where the the violation occurred, but recognizes that is not always possible.
And I compare these two. Naturally, my own was closer to the first one, so yeah. I prefer it. But I think that the other one is unnecessarily descriptive and exact. We don't really need to spell it all out. I think this is more general. The first one is more general, which is what we want. So if those are the two choices, I vote for number one.
And in law school, I'm learning this great phrase about the mythical reasonable person. So, you know, I would say if a reasonable person thinks there is programmatic nexus, or a reasonable person thinks there is geographic nexus, then...
Well, it's our
okay.
discretion.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is our discretion. Anybody... Any other comments from...
I just had on the resolution... I think we had one more escrow that needed to be crossed out in finding number 8. On the second line, SEP.
F10?
Oh, yeah. Second line, number 8.
That was it.
Okay. Do I hear a motion?
I move that we accept the resolution with the shorter of the late changes and also with the other late changes with wording substitutions.
Okay, moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Well done.
Yes.
Okay.
Good.